What up, what up, what up, everybody, and welcome. This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. How's everybody doing today? It is December 23rd, Christmas, the big day coming right up. We are celebrating with the best Christmas gift a Patriots fan could get on Sunday, and that is a huge win in Baltimore. Joining me, as always, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. This is the place to be for 1 hour commercial-free talk on the Pats in the NFL, wrapping presents, building toys, outrunning errands. Hit us up, put us on, and enjoy the conversation. Justin, what is going on, my man?
It's a great week. I was going to say great week in New England. I'm not in New England, doing an away game today, back with my wife's family in the Midwest. But I'd imagine everyone in New England is very full of that Christmas cheer this week. Lots to celebrate. What a game on Sunday night. I think Patriots took things to a whole new level this season with that victory.
Yeah, it is absolutely the talk of the town. It was a terrific win. I think all year long, Justin, we saw that Buffalo and Baltimore games kind of looming on the schedule. And what did we say? They needed to win one of those two games. And, you know, that's what they did. And I think that in getting that win on Sunday, they have positioned themselves really well, I think, to enter the playoffs with good energy, good momentum, and to still have a shot at the number one seed, which is very much, I think, a realistic possibility.
It is. I mean, look, you know, the Broncos obviously would have to lose one of their upcoming two games, but, you know, that last game of the season against the Chargers, that's not going to be an easy game. And meanwhile, the Patriots should have two very easy winnable games to close out the season. So, you know what? I mean, I like you said, I think it's very, very possible that the Patriots are getting that round one bye, ending up with the number one seed.
So let's get right into it, Justin. Let's talk about this game Sunday night, because I actually think it was more than just a win. I think it was a watershed moment for this franchise. I really, really believe that. And I'm going to tell you why. It's because Drake May put this team on his back and won this game in December, key spot, tough stadium, good opponent, in a way that we have never seen him do yet in his career. He hasn't done that yet. He did it on Sunday, coming back from two scores down in the fourth quarter. The team out there on Sunday night was not that good. They're ravaged by injuries. They had 8 or 9 injuries. He got physically just beat up the whole night. I thought he got his butt kicked. He was getting hit, constantly pressured on 50% of his snaps, or hit on 50% of his snaps. I thought Vrabel made some huge mistakes coaching-wise. I thought a lot went wrong. Drake May put this team on his back and won this game in a way we've never seen from him before. That, Justin, that is MVP caliber quarterback play. I thought it was a huge step forward for May and a huge night for this franchise for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. You know, we talk about, you know, how good Drake May's been all season and in the year two leap he's made. But, you know, the two things that I think we've mentioned all year that have been kind of looming over his head was, one, you know, we've yet to see him have to make that really big comeback fourth quarter, put the team on his back type of games, right? You know, we've been talking about that all year. And the other thing was, the other knock on him was, well, you know, for a leading MVP candidate, how has he not thrown for 300 yards yet this season, right? And so to come out in a primetime game against a good team and to not only throw for almost 400 yards, but to, like you said, absolutely take that game over when it really felt like up until that second to last drive, that, you know, the first touchdown of the second half, it really felt like the game was just heading in the wrong direction for the Patriots. Things weren't going their way. They were making dumb mistakes, you know, dumb mental errors. And just to see him kind of turn that entire game around, that was really something special, I think, for Patriots fans. And it kind of solidified that, you know, this kid does have that capability. We thought he did, and now we kind of know he does.
The other thing I love about Justin is the fact that they had such a bad week the week before. And like, one of the things, just if you remember back to Brady's rookie year, like, or his second year, the first year he started, whenever something went wrong, because a lot went wrong that year, especially early in the season, Brady always responded. Brady always responded when things went wrong. I love the fact that Drake May responded well to the adversity. That Buffalo game where he came up small, and a lot of us were questioning, does this guy have it? Is this guy, you know, is he a fourth quarter player? Is he really an MVP player? Is he the kind of guy that can go out and win a game for you when you shouldn't get the win? And the way he came out and answered, I think, on the biggest stage in a very tough spot is just a huge, huge step. It's just a huge encouraging thing for Patriots.
It was very encouraging. And, the two of us are texting before that, first incredible drive he had. And we said, you know, you texted me, you said, you know, this is where Drake May needs to step up and put the team on his back and prove that he's capable of that. And he went out and, you know, he had what I would argue to say. And, you know, look, as Patriots fans, I think we got to be very careful throwing this analogy out there. But it was as Tom Brady-esque as anything I've ever seen in the game. I mean, he came out in that second half on that drive, and it was just lights out. I mean, he was wheeling and dealing, you know, between the dink and dunks, the deep ball to Kyle Williams, which was an absolute dime. I mean, he looked so poised, so cool, calm, and collected, and he just went out there and he took care of business in a way that we haven't seen since the GOAT was under center.
It was Brady like, and it's I don't throw that term around lightly either, but I mean I think it was also Allen like or Mahomes like. And look, you know, comparing May to Brady, that's a bridge too far, because nobody really compares to Brady, and I think we're gonna do a lot of that over the next few years. The reality is that's probably just way too, you know, high a bar. But the bar that I hope for Drake May is more like Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, which is a top five elite quarterback. And I think that you can definitely comfortably say that these are the kind of things those guys do all a couple times a year in this league. And like, if you look at this team, Justin, they're really not that good. Like, why they're going to win 13 or 14 games this year, and they still have a lot of holes, and they've gotten killed by injuries the last few weeks. Why are they winning? It's because they have good coaching and they have a really great quarterback.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, the injuries, you know, they were a little beaten up headed into that game, and I feel like they really piled up during the course of Sunday night. And, you know, I think the big question with this team now is going to be, can they get healthy? You know, this is really where that number one seed would actually just be monumental for a team like this, getting an extra week off, you know, to get healthy. But like we've said in the past, you know, you bring it back to Mahomes, and we've kind of said that, you know, as the Chiefs team has kind of fluctuated over the years, we've said, well, they always have a chance to win it, and they're always in it because they have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, right? And when you have a good coach and when you have a good quarterback, everything else just kind of falls into place, and you're really never out of any game. And I'm hoping that the Vrabel-May combination is approaching, it's not quite there yet, but I'm hoping it's approaching that level of like, okay, we have one of the best in each position, and they're going to keep us alive really in any scenario.
I mean, it's a tried and true formula. And I would say, like, you know, the team that frightens me the most in the AFC, if I really think about it, might actually still be Buffalo. Definitely. And it's really because of one reason. That's Josh Allen. We just saw what he did 2 weeks ago, and he can go win any game, anytime, anywhere, because he's Josh Allen. I mean, I don't look at that Buffalo team as a great team. In fact, I look at the Buffalo team very similar to this Patriots team, right? Which is like a very flawed team with a really good quarterback, a great quarterback. And maybe the Pats have a little bit better coach, but I think McDermott, I know people give him a lot of crap. I think he's a decent coach. His time might be up in Buffalo. That's a different question. But like, yeah, that tried and true formula is the single reason why this very mediocre Buffalo team is even in the conversation right now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And you know, at this point, you know, I think we've seen from Buffalo that Buffalo is far from perfect. I would argue that this is one of the weaker teams that Buffalo's had in the last 4 or 5 years. But, you know, the combination of the AFC being wide open, some of the teams and quarterbacks that aren't going to be in the playoffs this year, and just the fact that, again, you got Josh Allen playing at a very dominant level, I think the Bills are up there, you know, is being the team to be most scared of in the AFC. It's actually funny because, you know, you talk about the Patriots being the number two seed right now, and how awesome that is. But realistically, the two teams that I'm afraid of most, or the two teams that they're you know, in line to potentially play the first round of the playoffs, which would be the Texans or the Bills, right? And those are the two 100% teams that I'm personally most afraid of. So I think it's I think if you're the Patriots, that again is another reason why that first round bye could just be monumental, you know?
1,000%. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm certainly rooting for that first round bye for the Pats for all the reasons you just illustrated. Before we move on, I do want to say one more thing about Drake May, Justin. I know we kind of hit on this a little, but like, and we've talked about this before, but it's just like, I just feel like it's so critical. Like if you're talking about what makes this kid what he is, it's like the toughness, the poise, the resiliency he showed on Sunday night, it was truly, that's what's truly elite about him. Mm-hmm. And I would also say the emotional maturity, if you saw his comments after the game, like this is a special kid. Like his makeup, his character is special. And I think at the end of the day, why do I feel so good about where this franchise is going? And why do I feel so good about Drake May? It's not because he throws the ball great, because he does. He throws a couple passes a week that I think he might be the only quarterback in the league that can throw. One of only two or three that can throw. The Kyle Williams one this week, perfect example. There was a couple others. He does it every week, but it's not the physical stuff that I love about this kid. It really is the character and the makeup. And just like he got his ass kicked on Sunday night and just the toughness he showed, that counts for everything, I think.
I mean, 100%. You know, look, 2 points to what you just said. I mean, we had the greatest of all time, undoubtedly, in Foxborough.
Yep.
In Tom Brady, I think everyone would agree, there was nothing about him that made him a physical specimen or stand out from an athletic standpoint. But he's, I think, inarguably the most mentally tough, poised quarterback to ever play the game. And that's what allowed him to be the GOAT, to make those great comebacks, to come up clutch, to succeed year after year after year, to be disciplined, you know, all those things. And it shows you how important that is and how much you can overcome from a physical standpoint if you have those mental attributes. And then the other thing is, you know, we've been saying for years on this podcast, talking about some of the players that have come into the NFL, which – ironically enough, we're gonna have to take medicine.
Yeah, we're gonna get we're both gonna take an ass kicking and around the league because there's a lot of medicine for both of us to be taken.
Exactly, a lot of medicine for us to take. But when it comes to those guys,
I think your point is well taken. I think you know.
Yeah, exactly. We've said that. Look, a lot of these guys come into the league with physical skill sets that are to be admired, and they don't have the mental traits and in the head game to succeed at quarterback. And so, you know, again, it just really emphasizes how important that is. And I think Drake May just at this point, you know, he strikes me as like unshakable. Like the kid is just so he's like a rock, honestly.
He is. And you know what? We're gonna get into around the league. We're gonna talk about Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, Sam Darnold, four guys that one of us or both of us have shat on at some point consistently for years. And they all had great weeks this week. And you and I look like idiots. Fine. This week, I still take Drake May and his character and his composure at this point in career over any of those guys. And I think they're all super talented physically guys, and so is May. But May's composure, I think, is just so much better than any of these. I don't think he's going to have some of the problems that those guys have had along the way.
No, he won't. And again, you know, you point out the fact that not only is he only 23 years old with those mental attributes, but he also has like the Josh Allen skill set from like a physical standpoint, right? Like the arm talents, the size, the speed, the athleticism, like the physicality. Like he really is the total package in terms of what you'd want in an NFL quarterback. And he's just getting started. So it's going to be a very exciting next, you know, 10, 15 years in New England with this guy as he continues to grow and develop.
Right. And when we say we love his demeanor, that isn't to diminish his arm talent, because it's like that's also amazing too. And even, you know, like some of these next generation stats, and I saw one today that I'm going to read. On Sunday, he completed four or five passes beyond 20 air yards against the Ravens for 111 yards. And he has a plus 62.6 points above average, that advanced statistic, plus 62.6 on deep attempts this season, more than 20 yards. And that is the best in the NFL and the best of any Patriots quarterback in 10 years. So, you know, like this guy's ability to throw the ball downfield is like truly elite. And you add it up with his makeup and his composure. And I just think it's a recipe for success.
Yeah, totally.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the game. There were a few things in this game that really pissed me off. So let's get to those, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to start with number one. I didn't think this was Vrabel's best game as a coach. And I love Vrabel as a coach. I think he's a great coach. I thought he got outcoached in a lot of different ways on Sunday. And I thought, you know, there were a couple things, the play calling in the first half, the lack of aggression. They finally let May loose in the second half, which they needed to do. We've been talking about it for weeks. So that was one little thing. But I really thought he screwed the pooch and made a big mistake in the second half of this game with a fake punt that was reckless, that was pointless, okay? And that really should have almost cost them the game if it wasn't for what Drake May did in the fourth quarter. You're playing against Snoop Huntley.
Yeah.
You're down by one score. You don't need to run a fake punt at that spot on a fourth and 10. It was a disastrous call. It was a stupid call, and it probably damn near cost them the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was definitely the wrong decision. You know, it's funny though, because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's the first fake punt they've ran all year, right? The first fake punt under the Vrabel tenure. And it, like you said, it was at such a bizarre time that I almost feel like that's why he did it, because nobody expected it or saw it coming. Like, it was almost like a so wild that, like, you know, he fooled himself, to be completely honest. Like, he did that was like a Dan Campbell-esque, just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And obviously it didn't work out, and it did seem pretty detrimental at the time. But you know what? I don't like the call. I definitely don't like the call. But if you're trying to outsmart everybody, that to me is like the last thing I would have expected at that point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because it was reckless. So,
right.
So if you're going to go for it on fourth and 10, we just talked about how great Drake May's downfield passing is. Put the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Don't put the ball in Marte Mapu's hands. I give a ton of credit, by the way, to Marte Mapu for tucking the ball down and just like taking the L, because a lot of guys would have chucked that up and maybe thrown a pick, and it could have even been a bigger disaster.
Right. Well, I mean, the fumble, you know, that's probably on par with, I guess, the pick. But, you know, I mean, to your point, like, he did try to at least do the smart thing. And you know what? Look, that's one of those things too, where, you know, we talk about the Patriots being poised in the second half and making a comeback. It's like, you know, they won in spite of making dumb decisions. So it is actually kind of encouraging in a way to see
because of Drake May.
Because of Drake May.
And you could say the Bills did the same thing 2 weeks ago against the Patriots. Like, you know, there were some dumb choices that Sean McDermott made.
Right.
Josh Allen went out and won them the game anyways.
Exactly. And look, I mean, look, I don't think it was Vrabel's best performance, but Harbaugh helped us out too. I mean, Derrick Henry doesn't touch the ball on that second to last. I mean, he made some dumb coaching mistakes too. So, you know, overall, this really came down to the players, I think, having a grit.
What do you think about this supposed rift between McDaniels and Vrabel that people keep talking about? I think the Boston sports media is just bored because things are going too well, so they have to make up shit. Like, how could anyone really try to sell to us, the fans, that there is a rift between Vrabel and McDaniels with the way things have gone for this team? Drake May is playing at MVP level. The offense has been great. Okay. They're winning games. How can you conjure up something out of nothing? I think it's complete BS.
It is BS. Look, I call that like the Felger and Mass special, like the 98.5 special, where you just, you have to find something to talk about to create controversy.
Controversy-driven medium.
Exactly. And it's like, I think that's the wildest thing. It's the farthest thing from the truth. I mean, you know, both of these guys have been asked about it. They both, you know, deny it vehemently and say that they have the utmost respect for each other. And, you know, sometimes I get it. People can talk out of one side of their mouth and you see something totally different or you feel something totally different. But like you said, ball don't lie. What you're seeing in the field and what you're seeing in terms of the harmony with this team, it's ridiculous to me. I wouldn't give it any credence whatsoever.
Is there any chance? Now, all that said, there's no rift, right?
No.
I mean, that doesn't mean they're BFFs, by the way. I mean, there is a such thing as a professional relationship.
Sure.
Yeah. And when when it's working on the field, then, you know, that cures a lot of if you don't like someone. And then when it's not working, these things tend to come to the surface. But right now it's working on the field. So I think it's all good. But is there any chance McDaniels moves on after this year?
No, I don't think so.
He's had a great season.
I don't think so. I mean, I think you couldn't really be in a better position right now as a coordinator, right? Like he's got a 23-year-old MVP candidate. You know, he's back home in New England where he made his bones. And look, he said, you know, a few months ago he was interviewed and he said, look, he didn't have any plans of moving. He was happy and I think it's Westwood or wherever he's at. He was like, I'm happy there. It's going to take, you know, I had no plans of pulling my kids out of school and moving and doing anything. Like, I think he really is happy here in New England. I mean, you know, look, he's had his shot at being a head coach a few times. Most of the success in his career has come at the coordinator level. And I just think he's just got such a good setup right now. Why would he ever want to tempt fate and screw that up?
I agree. I mean, if I was advising him, I would say this, Josh, stay put. You have a great situation here. You're a two-time failure as a head coach. I don't think an NFL franchise would dangle the keys to the franchise again to him because we've seen him fail twice in like the last few years. So, you know, why leave a situation where you're set up to have a 4 or 5 year run in a great situation, great head coach. You can do your thing as an OC. You've got a great young quarterback. It's working. He's playing at an MVP level. There's no reason to leave. Enjoy the success. Enjoy what you're good at. Be good at what you're good at. You're not a head coach in the NFL. You're a great offensive coordinator. There's no shame in that. You know, why jump to the next thing? Now, the one thing that I do think in the back of my head, I wonder if someone would give him, what about college? You know, Michigan, Ole Miss, something like that comes along. Could he convince himself that okay, I've failed in the Raiders, I failed at Denver, but you know, college is different. I don't know. That's the only thing I'd say, 10% chance maybe that he jumps for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's out of the question, but you know, again, it's just it almost feels like, you know, he's just at the beginning of riding this wave out in New England. You got a 23-year-old Drake May. It really feels like this franchise is just starting their ascension, right? Like it feels like they're getting poised for like a 10-year stretch, 5 to 10-year stretch that is just on the up and up. You know, every year you get into it. Like it just feels like I just can't see him leaving at this point in time. It'd be different if 5, 10 years down the road, you know, he's gotten May to his full potential. They've won a Super Bowl or two, and he says, you know what, maybe I'm going to take my shot again and try for something else. But he's just at the beginning stages of what they're building here in New England.
Yeah, I think he'd be crazy to leave. Plus, he's still getting paid by the Raiders, and he's getting some money from here, and he's in a great situation. He would be crazy to leave. Hopefully he stays because – I want to see the Vrabel McDaniels May trio for a long time.
Me too.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the refereeing on Sunday. I hate to bring it up, but it's a disgrace what's happening in this league. And I hope people in the league office understand why it's so frustrating for us as fans because it's so damn inconsistent. Can someone make it make sense to me? How? That was not pass interference on Kayshon Booty, but Carlton Davis the week before was on a key fourth down stop. Okay, how is that Carlton Davis barely touching the guy pass interference, but Humphrey's tackling Booty is not pass interference? It doesn't make any sense. It's inconsistent. It's all over the place, and that's why it's really hard to watch sometimes, Justin.
It's so frustrating. And it's all around the league, right? I know it's happened to the Patriots, you know, egregiously over the last couple of weeks, but all around the league, you're seeing this inconsistencies, these blown calls. Something needs to happen, right? I don't know if they need to bring back the rule that, you know, coaches can throw the challenge flag for penalties. I don't know if they need to institute some, you know, some additional guidelines for booth reviews or whatnot, but something needs to happen, because here's what really annoys me, to be completely honest, is, you know, you tell these guys, these players and these coaches to keep their mouths shut. They can't criticize the referees. They can't talk about the refereeing, or else they face suspensions. They face fines, right? The NFL is very, very ardent about that, right? But yet you have this just inconsistent and at times downright awful refereeing. And it's like, something's got to give.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm saying every week at some point in some game, that was the worst call I ever seen, but that was truly egregious. I mean, that was a beautiful tackle by Marlon Humphrey. It was a beautiful leg tackle. I mean, but like, you know, you get all these penalties where it's like ticky tack. He barely touched him. Even the, offensive pass interference against the Patriots earlier in the game was ticky-tack.
Yeah.
So, like, where is the damn consistency within a game, from game to game? There is none. And that's what's just so frustrating about the whole thing.
It is. And here's the reality of the situation is, yeah, obviously, May and the Patriots battled back and still wound up scoring, driving the ball down the length of the field, and ultimately winning the game off that drive. But I would venture to say that, like, 8 out of 10 times a blown call like that is going to result in the team losing the game, right? Like we got pretty lucky. And, you know, you want to see the referees out there, I think, keeping things consistent, efficient, like letting the game run as it's supposed to be ran. But you don't want to see them out there deciding games, especially important games. And yes, the Patriots overcame, but that was a game deciding blown call. Let's make no mistakes about it.
Yeah. 100%. And credit to the Patriots for having the resiliency to finish that drive, because you're right. Like 80-90% of the time when a team is the victim of a bad call like that, you know, it usually falls apart, and they were able to overcome that. But, you know, it doesn't make it any better. And like, I wonder what would have happened if Marlon Humphreys had intercepted that ball. And, you know, and then that could have been an interception somehow, you know, which would have just been egregious.
Yeah, absolutely. I was waiting for something to happen. Like in you know, you see the replay and the referee is right there. He's looking right at it, right?
Yes, there were three referees that yes. clear for you. It's like there I just don't get it.
There's no excuse. Yeah.
It almost bottles the mind. It's mind bottling.
It was almost like they took the play off and were watching it as spectators and forgot they had a job to do. Like that's how bad it was.
I mean, the whole world is sitting there waiting for the flag to come out. Collinsworth said it. I mean, like, we're all just sitting there and it's like, wait, where's the there's the word. Do you see the yellow like candy wrapper that was on the field? It kept showing up on the TV. So I saw that like five times. Right. So I'm like, wait, there's the candy wrapper. Where's the flag?
Right. Yeah. No, it was honestly one of the worst no calls I think I've ever seen, at least this season.
It takes a special place because, I mean, again, a perfect leg tackle while the ball's in the air. I don't get it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about this Ravens team before we move to around the league. And look, I mean, you said this earlier, and in a sense, you know, yeah, I thought the Ravens came out. I thought they had a good game plan. I thought Harbaugh, in some ways, coached a good game. And then he puked on his shoes in the second half. And he puked on his shoes in the second half because he didn't give the ball to Derrick Henry. I said it to you before the game. There's nothing worse than watching a team that can't stop the run.
Yeah.
Mainly because of injuries. Because this was an epic run defense when they were healthy. The Patriots were going to have a hard time stopping Derrick Henry. They did have a hard time stopping him. The Ravens forgot that Derrick Henry was on the damn roster in the second half of this game. That is the second piece of why the Patriots were able to win this game. One was Drake May, and two is Jim Harbaugh threw up on his shoes and stopped giving the ball to his best player.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was one of those situations where, again, you almost feel like a coach is like outsmarting themselves to the point where they do something that they think is so smart that it becomes stupid, right? Like there was no reason for Derrick Henry to be out of there. To that point in the game, the Patriots, you know, outside of that fumble, the Patriots had a really tough time stopping Derrick Henry in that run game. And I'm sitting there watching it, and every snap that went by that Derrick Henry wasn't in the game, I said to myself, I was like, "What are the Ravens doing?" Right? Like that it was actually kind of crazy to watch. In real time. So yeah, that was a really dumb decision.
Especially because you got a backup quarterback And right. I know they were afraid probably that he was going to fumble again. He had a key fumble. I totally get it, but it's like he, with Lamar Jackson out, he really is their best hope. All due respect to Snoop Hundley, who I thought played terrific, by the way. But like, you can't, I think, exclude Henry from the offense in that spot when you're rolling with a backup quarterback. I'm sorry. It was a huge mistake. And I do wonder, Justin, you know, like I watched that Ravens team. They made a couple other mistakes that night. You know, I am starting to wonder, is it time? Is Harbaugh's window closed? Is Harbaugh's time up? Is that team's window closed? It does feel like from afar watching that Ravens team, like even though Jim Harbaugh is a great coach, even though he will get scooped up in 2 seconds by another NFL team, it almost feels like it's one of those things where it might be time for a change in Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, it might, because at a certain point, you know, I get it. You know, the team has definitely been underperforming. They've had injuries. They've had this. They've had that. But at a certain point, you know, you can't keep giving the head coach a pass. And this is a Ravens team that I think, honestly, for the last 5 years or so has been primed to make that Super Bowl run. And something just seems to go wrong every year. And, you know, look, eventually the coach isn't going to be able to escape the blame. So I personally love Harbaugh. I think he's a great coach.
He's a great coach. I agree.
And I think.
But if there's one thing we've learned in New England is that even a great coach, their message can stop working.
So I agree. And look, I think
with Belichick,
if they let him go, I think you could almost have a Vrabel type situation where wherever he goes to next is gonna hit the jackpot to get a coach like him.
1,000%.
But I think it might just be time for a change of scenery.
That's all I really think it is. But you know, before you dismiss that, I feel like that's just kind of the way of the world in the NFL and even life. Like, you know, everything runs its course, and sometimes it just needs new voice, new ways, new methods, and a new start. And I wonder if that's just where that Baltimore team is now. All right, but anything you want to add about this epic game from Sunday before we move on to around the league?
No, the one thing I just don't want to overlook is, you know, you were unhealthy coming into that game. You're extremely, I think, unhealthy as a team right now coming out of it. Everybody seemed to get banged up. And so, you know, the health of this team, that's something that I think we really got to pay attention to down the stretch. I wonder if they, you know, they rest guys against the Jets and the Dolphins trying to get healthy, or what that looks like playing with a bunch of backups. But I think that's going to be something that we can't overlook.
I think they can take this Jets team down with even a beat up roster. And I also think that Milton Williams is maybe the best player. If he's not the best player on the team, he's the second best player on the team. I still think May is probably better, but he's a game changer, Milton Williams. And this defense is going to look totally different with him in there, even if it's for 30 or 40 snaps. So, you know, like, I feel like if he comes back, they're going to be able to handle both the Jets and the Dolphins, even with a beat up roster. And if they don't get that number one seed, then you take that Dolphins game as your bye week and you rest up.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I know, I think he's eligible to come back for this Jets game, but
he is.
I'd sit him another week, to be completely honest. I don't think you.
Yeah.
I don't really.
Well, can they handle the Jets with a beat up roster and no Wilton Williams? I would still say yes.
I do too. Yeah.
They're playing a third string quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Jets are starting. What's the guy? What's the name? I don't even know the name. The guy is it Cook? Is that his name?
I don't even know. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, like they're on to like. I mean, finally they smartened up and took Tyrod Taylor out of there before he won them, Brady Cook, before he won them too many games. But Brady Cook is going to start. I mean, this is really a true number three quarterback. So it's like, you should be able to handle this, you know, no matter what you trot out there, as long as you have Drake May.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's move to around the league, Justin. And I want to start with this. What's really crazy, this has been a crazy NFL season, by the way. And I don't think I can ever remember a season in my life where it is week 17, the next to last week of the year, and there are 10 teams alive in both conferences, 10 teams that could still have the number one seed, 4 in the NFC and 6 in the AFC, that still have a mathematical chance at the number one seed going into the next to last week. It's the Pats, the Bills, the Jaguars, the Texans, the Broncos, and Chargers in the AFC all have a path to the number one seed. And in the NFC, the Bears, Seahawks, Niners, and Rams all have a path to the number one seed. That's crazy.
It's very crazy. It's been a wild year in the NFL so far. And, you know, you got some teams that I think are just really surprising people. I know we're going to talk about a couple of them, I'm sure, in a few minutes. But it has been quite the year in the NFL. You know, I mean, you look at the NFC and you look at teams like the Eagles, who looked so dominant, you know, less than a year ago in that Super Bowl victory. And you say to yourself, well, how do you stop a team like that? And they've kind of, you know, fallen off. You know, you look at, you know, the Mahomes and the Burrows and the Lamars of the world. And, you know, to think that none of them will even be in the playoffs, like it's created this almost like a vacuum, right? This power vacuum where you have all these teams that are trying to step up and fill that spot. I think it's been really good for the NFL. Honestly, it's very entertaining from a fan perspective. Like, I think it's been great.
It has been
having all these teams, you know?
Yeah, it has been. And, you know, like, look, the faces are different. The names are different. The players are different. The one thing this weekend showed me is that, you know, there are new teams at the top of these conferences, but these teams are legit. Like, yeah. These teams are legit. Like, the Jaguars are legit, you know. The even the Chargers, who we always dump on, right? They're legit good teams in the AFC and the NFC. So, like, yes, different names, different faces, different stories, but not going to be an easy path out of either conference. There are some really good teams, I think, that have sort of emerged from the pack.
Yeah, I agree. The one caveat I'd give to that is I'm still not putting it past some of these teams to crap their pants in the playoffs. You know,
I agree with that. We're going to get to that.
But I will say that they've at least earned the right to be talked about as legitimate teams heading into the end of the year.
So who walks away with the number one seed in each conference?
I still got to give it to the Rams. I think.
Yep.
I think the Rams walk away as the number one seed. I'm going to stick with the Broncos just because I don't see them lose to the Chiefs, and they got the Chargers at home to close out the year. Obviously, that's the most dangerous game left in the schedule for them, but I still think they should win that game. So I'm going to say the Rams and the Broncos.
I'm going Rams for sure. And one of the reasons why, the Seahawks have a tough schedule. They play at Carolina, which is going to be, I think, a very tough game for them this weekend on Sunday. And then they end the season at the 49ers. So I feel like the Seahawks are going to lose one of those two games. The Rams have a cupcake schedule.
Yeah.
They have the Falcons and they have the Cardinals at home to end the season. So I feel like the Rams are going to win out. The Seahawks probably lose a game. I like the Rams to get the number one seed. I mean, I think they're the best team in the NFC. I will say, I don't think Seattle's a hair behind them, you know, that's all it is, because they're pretty much even teams. And we saw that on Thursday night with that epic game. In the AFC, I do like the Patriots to get the number one seed, because I think they have two cupcake games. I think they take care of business against the Jets this week. And Miami, I'm sorry, no way they're coming up here on January 4th and winning a game with Quinn Ewers as a quarterback. These are cupcake softball games. I actually would say watch out for the Chiefs this week, Denver, especially if Gardner Minshew is healthy. He's not going to be. But even with a third-string quarterback in there for Kansas City, in Arrowhead, how many times have the Chiefs been on the other side of the Broncos playing spoiler to them over the years? It's a division game. It's a short week. I think this is a huge letdown spot for Denver, coming off a big winning streak and almost getting outclassed by Jacksonville last week. Denver is a team that has played down to their competition all year long, up or down to their competition all year long. So I do not give them the automatic W on the road in Kansas City on Christmas night. I think it's a huge letdown spot. And then they end with the Chargers, who are red hot and have, you know, that's going to be a 50-50 game. So I feel like there's a good chance Denver loses one of those two. And I think the Pats went out and sneak in.
I really hope so. Again, you know, we've talked about how big that would be for this team. Not only just mentally for the Patriots to say that, you know, they've literally completed the full circle transformation, going from one of the worst teams in the league the last couple of years to now the number one seed in the AFC. I think that would just be massive. But again, the health of this team, having an extra week off, in avoiding one of those tough first round matchups, would be monumental
It would be monumental. And just like, you know, I mean, the amazingness of winning 13 or 14 games for the Patriots, it's just unbelievable when you think about where this franchise was going into the season. Yep. All right. Let's talk about a couple other things. Look, we got some medicine to take, you and I, because there are four quarterbacks I think that have been literally we dump on pretty much every episode of this podcast, and all four of them shine this week. All four of them had maybe some of their best games of their career. I want to start with Thursday night, ancient history. It feels like now 5 days ago, Sam Darnold, Justin, we were texting the whole game about how Sam Darnold came up small again. And guess what? He did come up small, but they gave him a chance to win that game. The Rams kind of threw him an opportunity. He took it. And then he came up really big in the end of that game. What do you want to say to Sam Darnold, who you have consistently doubted and disrespected the last two seasons?
I want to say that it was nice to see them go out and do that. But I'm sorry, I'm still not sold that he can do that consistently, or he will be able to do that consistently during the playoffs. I mean, look, you know, for years we've dubbed them the talented losers: Sam Darnold, Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, what's his name, Justin Herbert. And you know what? It's like that old movie, Revenge of the Nerds, right? It's the revenge of the losers, the talented losers. This year, yep. The losers are coming back with a vengeance this year, and they're all leading their teams to big things and playing pretty well. But look, make no mistake about it, I'm still not convinced. I'm willing to take medicine on the fact that all four of those guys are doing something this year that I didn't think they were capable of doing. But with that being said, I'm going to need to see them do it in the big stage, in the playoffs, when it counts. I think Sam Darnold got very lucky the other night because he tried to give that game away. And I think the defense kept him in it to a certain extent. The Rams making a couple dumb decisions kept him in it to a certain extent. So, you know, I still don't think those guys have gotten the monkey off their back. I just think they've taken a step towards redeeming themselves, but they're not fully there.
I mean, of the four of those guys, I do think Darnold's performance stands out for the reason you just said, which is like he really did completely collapse and melt down in the second half of that game at one point. And then a couple things happened. One was a punt return for a touchdown, and number two was a turnover that set them up with a short field. And then he went off and he went on fire from that point. But let's not forget a terrible pick six before that, in a terrible pick in the red zone as well, that were just awful, where you're sitting there saying, man, typical Sam Darnold coming up small. Yeah. And then he got a couple breaks, and to his credit, he made the most of it. But I do agree that there was a point in that game where it looked like the same classic Sam Darnold seeing ghosts, completely, completely imploding.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, for that reason, I want to say that Darnold and the Seahawks got more lucky than they did anything in that game. Because again, you know, the Rams typically don't make mistakes. The Rams are a pretty well-coached team. Matt Stafford's usually pretty solid. The fact that they kind of gave that game back to Seattle after Seattle gave that game to them in the first half, like that, I think that's the biggest reason why the Seahawks won that game.
Yeah. And look, what a collapse for the Rams on the other side of that. I mean, you literally have the number one seed all but locked up, 16-point lead in the fourth quarter, and just completely melt down. And the Rams meltdown happened on all three phases. It was special teams. Right. It was offense, and it was defense. So, you know, it's, I don't know how much you read into that about the future of that team, because I do think they're the best team in the NFC, but that was just a total implosion by the Rams for sure.
It was a total implosion. And one, you know, one other thing I think just worth pointing out, just as a little side note, because we've talked a lot in this show about mid-season trades and acquisitions, you know, where teams kind of, you know, go for gold and it blows up in their face. But the Seahawks acquiring Rashid Shaheed, at the deadline, what a pickup that's been for them. Not only giving Darnold another weapon, but his special teams has been lights out. He's got like two or three returns for a touchdown. That return against the Rams, I think, is really what shifted the whole momentum of that game and got them back in it. Like, what a great pickup for them.
110%, Justin. Great pickup for the Rams. And you're right, that punt return, they don't win that game if it wasn't for that punt return. There's no doubt in my mind. It got them some momentum, which they sorely needed because, you know, Sam Darnold was completely rattled at that point in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, look, I'm going to take some medicine. I'm taking a full dose. I took a half dose last week. I'm going to stop doubting Caleb Williams. And I'm not going to be one of these people that uses the excuse, well, he's never won a Super Bowl, or he's not the best quarterback in the league, or he's never won MVP. Like, look, Caleb Williams is proving his doubters wrong. He's proving he's a good quarterback. I don't know if he's an elite quarterback. I still like Drake May better than him. I think he's in the maybe the 8 to 12 kind of space.
Yeah.
That's a damn good player. And what he's doing right now, there are still limitations to his game. Yes, there are still things he does that are really awkward, that are wrong. He has a lot to clean up. His completion percentage is low. Look, it, the guy is out there. He's proving he's a good NFL quarterback. I'm not going to deride this guy and say that take a victory lap or say that I was right about him because he's not the greatest quarterback to ever put on a helmet. He's a good quarterback. I doubted him. I was wrong. He's proving me wrong. He is proving he can play in this league. And I think Caleb Williams, you know, I'm going to stop doubting him, or at least his place as a top 10 quarterback in this league.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think that Caleb Williams, you know, has suffered from in the past is, you know, you look at who his coach and his offensive coordinator was, you know, the first couple of years of his career. It's easy to see how he never kind of got to take that next step. And now with somebody like a Ben Johnson at the helm and him having a complete roster, right? We've talked about it ad nauseum. He's got weapons. He's got an O-line. He's got a defense. He's got a really good offensive-minded coach that the team seems to really be gravitating around. I mean, look, he called out Ben Johnson after the win the other night. He said, I got the best coach in the world, right? They seem to really be clicking.
100%.
So, you know, you take somebody like Caleb Williams who does have the physical talents, right? We've seen some passes and some of the arm talent that Caleb Williams has the capability of making. We've seen the athleticism, some of the scrambles, some of the things he's able to do on the ground. Obviously, we question his mental attributes, right? But I think he has enough pieces of the puzzle there that you can say that Caleb Williams is a decent NFL quarterback right now, and he's playing it. I'm not ready to call him elite. I'm not ready to say the Bears.
Yes, I agree. I wouldn't call him elite either. But I will also say that I'm not going to sit here and say how much I value clutch and how much it's important to come through in big spots, and then deride Caleb Williams because five of the Chicago Bears wins. They have five comeback wins this year, including one last Saturday against the Packers. So I have to give him credit because he's proving to be at this level clutch, and he's winning games in the fourth quarter. And that means a lot to me when I'm evaluating quarterback play. I think that counts for a ton.
I think it does. He's one quarterback, you know, and I'm sure there's another one that we'll talk about in a few minutes, but he's one quarterback that I would argue has made maybe the biggest leap from last year to this year. You know, he's at least up there. You know, you talk about Drake, you talk about Trevor and a couple of these other guys, but the leap he's taken from last year to this year, I think is kind of been night and day. And look, I don't care how good of a team you have or how good your coach is. You don't get to whatever they are, 10-4, 11, something like that, 10-4 in the NFC North without being a decent quarterback. So
a thousand percent. I mean, you have to be consistent and call it like it is. And that's why I'm here. I'm taking my medicine. Okay. Now, other side of the coin, Trevor Lawrence, again, now he's looked great the last 2 weeks. So credit to Trevor Lawrence. He's had little spurts like this in the past.
Yes.
So I'm not taking medicine yet on Trevor Lawrence. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a formidable team. They have a great defense. They have a coach that's proving he is a great coach. Okay. Liam Cohen, I'll take medicine on. I doubted him because of his press conference. A lot of us did. He's proving everyone wrong. The guy is a terrific coach, knows what he's doing, getting the best out of Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is still the 20th rated quarterback by QBR in this league. He's 28th in quarterback rating. He's had two good weeks in a row. Let's not go take a victory lap on this guy yet. I still very much doubt that when he's not playing a beat up Jets team, that he can do it. Now, I know at Denver is a legit win for Trevor Lawrence. It's probably the best win of his career. Fair. But I'm still not believing yet. I'm still skeptical.
Listen, you're gonna have to send in the security guards and strap me down to the hospital bed in order for me to take medicine on Trevor Lawrence. I'm not there yet.
Call it a Section 12. We're gonna have to Section 12 you.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think I'll ever be ready to take medicine on him. He's gonna have to do a lot more to prove that he's a quarterback that's worthy of the praise and the hype that he gets. Like you said, he's had stretches in the past. I'm actually more willing to take medicine on Liam Cohen than I am Trevor Lawrence.
100%. I'll take the medicine on Liam Cohen.
Right. Because I thought it was going to be a disaster with Liam Cohen. He's actually been really good. He's looking like he's got the respect and the command of that locker room, which, you know, is obviously a reason why that Jacksonville team has been as good as they are. They have a defense that they kind of just put together out of thin air. I mean, I can only name one or two players in that defense, and somehow they've been very good. So you got to think the head coach has a lot to do with it. But when it comes to Trevor, you know, I still think, let's put it this way, whoever the Jaguars wind up drawing in the first round of the playoffs, if I could place a blind bet right now, and not even knowing who the opponent is and just bet the other team money line, I would do it, because I still don't trust a Trevor Lawrence in a big game like that against a good team.
You know, Justin, I agree with that 1,000%, but I respect that Jaguars team. And I think the fact that they're winning in spite of Trevor Lawrence should make us all a little bit afraid of Jacksonville. I too have been very dismissive of Jacksonville. I'm like, hey, I hope we get them in Foxborough in January. I don't know, man. I watched that game on Sunday in Denver. I saw a team. I saw a team that was like Trevor Lawrence is having success because he is surrounded by great players on both sides of the ball. That's the recipe. You can't count on Trevor Lawrence, but they have such a great team. I do fear them a little bit. I did not fear them 3 or 4 weeks ago. I do fear and respect that Jacksonville team. Now they're winning my respect with the way they're playing on the field. All right, let's go to the last, maybe the president of the Talented Loser Club, Revenge of the Losers continues. Justin Herbert, big win, big game on Sunday. Again, another one. Look, we've seen these spurts from Justin Herbert before. He is someone that I do need to see it in January for, because we've seen him look really good at times, and then he always falls apart when it counts.
Totally. I mean, look, he's another one that the physical talent is there, right? I don't think you can argue that. Like the guy has almost all the physical talents you'd want your quarterback to have. But I just don't think he's capable of consistently coming up big in big moments when it counts. I mean, look, you know, regular season heroes are a thing in professional sports, right? And I just think he's one of them. He's another one that whoever they wind up playing in the first round of the playoffs, I mean, it actually funny. I think it could wind up being the Jaguars in the Chargers. I think right now it's looking like it's going to be Pittsburgh in the Chargers, but whoever they play, I'm going to take the opponent too, just because I like the coach. I like the team, but I don't like the quarterback in big moments.
Yeah, that's a very fair take. I can't dispute that, because he has come up small so many times and he has not played great this whole season. I know he's looked good the last 2 weeks. Okay, couple more quick ones. Is this the last bite of the apple for the Buffalo Bills? Right? Like, I mean, if I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, you know, we're talking as Patriots fans, conference wide open. Buffalo's had a 5-year run here where they've had multiple opportunities. I'm looking at Buffalo. If I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, I'm looking at this and be like, look, this is the most wide open it's ever been at any point in this run for us. I feel like this feels like it could be the last bite of that apple for Buffalo with this regime. There might be another one with Josh Allen.
So on the surface, I agree with that, right? And I certainly think that if they disappoint, that McDermott is out. I just don't see any possible way you keep McDermott around short of winning a Super Bowl at the end of the season. I really think he's coaching for his job. But it's almost weird to say that, because I look at this Bills team, and we just talked about how, like, we're not super confident in the team. We don't think it's a great team. Other than Josh Allen, like, what superstars does this team have? Like, when you talk about blowing it up, right? Or like big contracts, who are they shipping out of town? Like, I feel like their defense is a lot of, you know, average guys. They got a lot of young players in that team. I mean, same thing in the offense. They have no, you know, big money skilled players. I know they signed James Cook to a 2-year deal, but all the wide receiver room has kind of been cobbled together. Like, I just feel like I want to say it's the end of the line for them, but there's so much room for growth on that roster that I almost wonder if they could keep that going just with the new head coach.
Yeah, well, you know, to that point, as long as you have Josh Allen, I don't think the window in his prime, I don't think the window is ever like truly closed. So maybe, you know, but I just feel like, I guess more than saying the window is closing, like maybe it's just something you say, like, this is a golden opportunity for Buffalo this year. This is a golden opportunity.
This is the best opportunity they've ever had. I mean,
Mahomes is out, Burrow is out, Jackson is out. Lot of upstarts in the conference. Like, this is it, Buffalo. Go out there and do what you got to do to get into the Super Bowl, because it is wide open for you.
I almost venture to say that, like, you know, as much as I'm rooting for the Patriots, obviously, like, if Buffalo doesn't win the Super Bowl or at least make it out of the AFC, like, I would be shocked. I really would. Yeah. Because this is just like almost like a once in a lifetime, like the floodgates have opened, the sea has parted, and Buffalo is going to have the easiest route to a Super Bowl they've ever had.
And I'll tell you one thing, if I'm Buffalo, the team I fear most is the Patriots.
Yeah.
The Patriots might be the only team I fear from the Buffalo Bills, because they've played two games and those were even games. And I feel like in any other game in a playoff setting, Josh Allen, his excellence, his experience, they have the huge advantage, I think, over any of these other teams. But the Patriots are the one team I would be afraid of if I were the Bills.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, two more quick 1-minute takes and then we're going to wrap it up. Number one, do you buy the Eagles' resurgence? Because I don't. Beating the bag out of the Raiders and the Commanders does not give me any reassurance that this mess in Philadelphia is fixed. I'm still complete. I was in on the Eagles for a long time. They burned their bridge with me. I said I was out of them 2 weeks ago. Nothing that can happen against those two crap teams is going to change my opinion of that. So I'm still out on the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not buying the resurgence of the Eagles, but I think I'd caveat that by saying when you have as much talent as they have and they're fairly healthy, that I guess any singular game they could flip a switch and hit a groove and, you know, turn it on. With that being said, though, I still don't love the Eagles. I think they're probably, I think they're probably due for an early exit, depending on who they run up against.
Yeah, and you know, the difference between this year and 2023 is they will get a home game this time, because remember they had to go to Tampa as a wild card before, and that was a big I thought a, you know, for a team that was struggling, that was another thing that was just too much for them to overcome.
Yeah.
All right, and then last take. The Kansas City Chiefs moving out of Arrowhead Stadium to a dome, 2031 is the expected year completion. First of all, absolutely hate this.
Me too.
Absolutely hate that they're, I mean, all these teams, the Bears are building a frigging dome. The Browns are, I mean, who's going to play football outside? Is this the NBA now? Everything's going to be in an arena and indoors. So I hate this move. The Chiefs should be in Kansas City. Hope it falls apart somehow. Have no idea if it can. I'm giving you my hot take. Patrick Mahomes will not be the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs in 2031 when they play their first game in that dome. Agree or disagree, Justin?
You know, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to disagree just because I feel like, you know, look, they locked him up for 10 years. I believe he should still be under contract. And unless he decides to try to force his way out of town, I just don't see how a franchise voluntarily moves on from a guy like that. And especially, you know, you're coming to a new stadium and you have a new beginning. I'd want to begin that endeavor with the guy who brought us to greatness and won us three Super Bowls. So I think he's going to be the quarterback. But I will say I do hate the move. And you know, one of the biggest, I think, advantages that the Chiefs have had has been teams having to come to Arrowhead in
100%.
January. And it's like, you know, it's 8 degrees. It's one of the loudest, toughest stadiums to play in. The weather is hostile, like the environment. Like, you're totally giving up that edge by moving to
a team. I mean, Arrowhead is one of those – it's, first of all, it's one of the hallowed halls of football in the sport. I mean, this is like a legendary stadium. It's also one of the last remaining old design stadiums that really was conducive to noise being in the stadium because of its small footprint and the fans being right. They don't right on top of the field. They don't build stadiums like that anymore.
Right.
You know, all the new stadiums are loud, but I think Arrowhead was a little different because it just when it was built and for the reasons I illustrated. So it's really sad to see that go. I mean, it's definitely on my to-do list. Like, I got 5 years to get out there because I got to get to Arrowhead before they close it down because it's just a legendary place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sad to see it go. Like you said, I hope something happens. And I hope, you know, again, you talked about the Bills and the Chiefs both targeting domes. You know, the elements in football was one of the things to me that always made football so special is that, you know, unlike baseball and some of these other games, you don't have rain delays, you know, you don't have weather delays. You go out and you play and you persevere, no matter what the elements are, short of like a monsoon or like an awful thunder, you know, thunder and lightning storm. So like, I love playoff football, end of the year football, having to go and face the elements and having that be an advantage that those teams that have to play there have. So, you know, I don't want to see football moving away from that, but it feels like
100%. But the thing is, all these cities, these cold weather cities want Super Bowls. And the way you get a Super Bowl is you build a dome. And I think that the financial benefit of getting a Super Bowl, it pays for a part of the stadium. And that seems like a model that a lot of these, you know, cities are using now to get these very expensive stadiums built, get a Super Bowl there and recuperate some of the money that they invest in that. But it is absolutely a sad thing to see like the weather go. You're looking at Cleveland, legendary, the wind by the lake and, you know, the old Cleveland Municipal Stadium. I don't know if you've ever been to the waterfront in Cleveland. It's a great stadium right on the waterfront. Super impressed with it when I went there. You know,
Chicago too.
Chicago, another one, old Soldier Field right on Lake Michigan. You know, now Kansas City. Yeah, we've already lost Minnesota. You know. I mean, what's next? A dome on Lambeau Field? Is that coming? You know, so it's really. I think it's a part of the game that is going to be lost. That I think is really sad.
Yeah, but you know what? It might very well serve in the future. You know, 10 years from now. You know, you look at teams like the Patriots, who are probably going to have one of the last remaining like battle of the elements. You know, cold weather. Exposed to the element stadiums. And I think that's gonna wind up serving an advantage to us.
100% it is. And those teams that remain outside are going to have that advantage. Yeah. But Patrick Mahomes, Justin, I honestly think 5 years from now, you know, I think it'll be done for him. Really do. So we'll see what happens. All right. Anything else you want to add up before we wrap this up? Christmas week edition of the Ultimate Patriots podcast?
No. But like you said at the beginning, you know, I can't remember the last time we've gone into the last 2 weeks of the season like this with so much left to be settled between like division winners, number one seeds, you know, the playoff pitcher. There's just there's a lot left up in the air, and I think it's just making for a very entertaining NFL season.
Yeah, it has been an extremely entertaining NFL season. I mean, there's three. The first game kind of sucks on Christmas, but I think the last two at least have some playoff implications. So, hey, want to wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas, right? A happy holiday season. Enjoy it. It is the most special time of the year. So I hope you all enjoy it with your friends and family. Justin, I want you to put your feet up. And I want you to relax this Christmas because trust me, for like the next 10 to 15, you're probably not going to be relaxing very much. I know you have a little one on the way.
Yeah.
And then Christmas gets to be a lot of work too. But it really is my favorite holiday still. I know people complain about it, but I've never been one to shy away from a challenge. So I kind of like the whole chaos of it. But everyone, please enjoy it. It is truly a blessed and special time of the year. Justin, we will miss you, by the way, in Christmas in Foxborough. You will be missed, but I hope you have a wonderful time in Nebraska, my man, and the rest of all of you the same.